CliffCentral.com. Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on CliffCentral.com.
Hey, good morning, folks, and it's another Monday morning. Hopefully not a blue Monday for the guys in the studio. How's it, Wandy?
Not at all.
Hi, George, how are you?
Lucky you.
Oh, fantastic. Well rested and ready for the week.
Yeah,
let's knock it out.
I see you still got your headphone skew there. Always puts me off somehow. Yeah. I don't know.
Let's get used to it.
No, I'm used to it already. It's fine. It's just thing. It just looks so gangster.
Yeah, well, I try. I got
it. It looks so gangster. It's so cool. Hey, Lawrence.
How are you doing, George?
Lucky you.
Oh, good.
Good. How's your weekend?
I did as little as possible and took as much time doing it.
Ah. Okay, that's interesting. I didn't wrap my head around that for a second.
Yeah, it was birthday weekend, so yeah, I just had a bunch of people over. Yeah. It rained.
Okay. I follow, out of interest, I follow the Stoic Seneca. I follow his writings from time to time, and you know, one of the things he believed in was that you have to follow, or the only thing that's real is philosophy, which is taking time to understand life, death, truth, all those things, and taking time doing nothing is not actually doing nothing. It's actually introspecting, reflecting, doing all those things, right?
Yeah, no. Like when I say I was doing nothing, I was doing stuff, but you know, not being overly productive.
Well, Martin, how's it going?
All right, thank you, George.
Thank you. How's your weekend?
I spent it working on other people's cars. Friends of mine.
Fitted
some management systems and so on. So throwback to the old times.
Throwback to the old times. What do you mean?
Well, I haven't fitted one of those things in ages, and there I had to do two in one day.
Gee whiz. Okay. Did you come right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Nothing sounds like an Audi 5 cylinder.
I think it sounds like that's almost got like that rough sound, almost like a flat four.
It's the 1-2-4-5-3 firing order. Ask me how I know that firing order.
Well, you've fitted it enough times. Anyway, getting straight into it, and in the news, the first piece of news for this week was Ford announces special automotive hub to boost the local industry. Now, this is quite an interesting one because they're investing in this piece of land, for lack of a better term, and the idea is that Ford will help cause a boost to the economy through secondary suppliers to the manufacturing industry. So what do you guys think? Will this work? Won't it work?
I'm just concerned that it might not be as sustainable as they think it is.
Why?
What aftermarket parts are they making here? Who's really going to benefit from this, and for how long?
Well, they say component suppliers. So I suppose it's things like starter motors, drivetrains, parts,
everything from dashboard covers to seat foam to nuts and bolts.
Okay,
there is a whole industry downstream from actual automotive manufacturing that just really tentacles its way out into, if you took a PE, you have the VW factory. Most of PE exists because of the VW factory and all of the secondary and third and fourth and fifth businesses that exist because of that factory and what they require to build cars.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to happen in Silverton, which is the assembly plant, Ford's assembly plant in Gauteng. So, like Lawrence rightly points out, they're all over the country, mostly down the Eastern Cape, but they're all over the country. This one's in Silverton, and it's the piece of land adjacent to the Silverton plant that was officially launched by President Cyril Ramaphosa in a soil-turning ceremony last week, Tuesday. So, suppliers to the automotive industry and I'm hoping this is not just suppliers to Ford will be the ones that are targeted, with the expectation that initially in the first phase 7,000 jobs will be created, and expected to reach 162 hectares of land, ultimately contributing 70,000 jobs in the total value chain. Wow. It's a little known fact, or maybe it's a well-known fact, that a very big part of the cars that you see on the South African roads are actually South African manufactured parts. Mm. And the assembly plant uses a high percentage of South African components.
And that's not just for local cars, that's for the cars that we export overseas as well.
Yes. So the component industry, like Lawrence points out, is a massive industry. I'd be curious to kind of go and look up what the contribution to the overall 7% of GDP is.
Well, I think this is a great idea. And it's a great implementation as well, because Ford is very good at efficient manufacturing, which is why they tend to keep their prices reasonably well contained and everything else. So these secondary suppliers, or these suppliers to Ford and to the aftermarket, will pick up a whole lot of tricks from Ford, from basically training by Ford on how to do this efficiently. And I think this will eventually lead to the entire component supply chain in South Africa moving into a more efficient mode.
Yeah.
Well, let's hope. Let's hope it gives a boost to the economy, and you know, everyone knows we bloody need it. So let's hope this works out. I mean, good on Ford for leading the charge when it comes to investment in the economy. Then the next story is a new era. VW unveils its first ID.3 electric car, and it rolls off the actual production line. Except, sadly, it's not coming to South Africa for the foreseeable future.
That sucks, because I have seen this thing in the metal overseas. It is a stunning car.
Yeah,
I'm just really, really upset that so many of our auto manufacturers locally just, there's no plans to bring electric cars, or they are, but they're so far down the road.
Is it our local assemblers, or is it VW in Germany?
I think it's VW in Germany. Yes, to be perfectly honest with
I mean, you. I'm surely the guys in South Africa are saying, "Give us the car, give us the car." And you know, we spoke about this last time. I wonder what the barriers are. Is the barriers, or are the barriers, tooling? Is it charging infrastructure? I mean, we'll get to a story later on when it comes to you know, this VW in Rwanda. But what is the actual barrier to bringing this car to South Africa?
I think it's the fear of not selling them.
The fear of not selling them.
Yeah. Because they don't want to be left holding the can, so to speak.
I agree. Mm.
So in Germany, the government is planning on expanding the electric charging infrastructure and upgrading it. You know, come on, South Africa, we can do this. Of course we can.
Will the car be affordable enough in South Africa, though, to convince people to make the switch? That's the thing.
Mm.
And I think that is the barrier, really. It is. There is, our data shows that there is a demand for electric cars. People want them.
They want them.
But the manufacturers, I don't think, are prepared to put in the initial investment to bring 20 cars and then only sell 5 and then get left holding 15.
Yeah, well, the problem is, if they don't get the massive tax rebates that electric vehicles get overseas,
it's the tax costs.
Becomes the big factor.
Yeah.
Bring the cars.
Bring the cars, that's what I say.
Bring the car, bring the cars. Drop the tax.
Drop the tax. Sounds like a picket.
Yeah. Let's get into politics, George.
No, thank you. That's a never-ending war. And then the new South African-developed Lyft app hits the market. So this little app is called Lyfty.
Mm.
And local taxi e-hailing app war against the likes of the current incumbents continue. Now, apparently this little Lyfty, if you had to compare the price, a trip from Oliver Tambo International to Parktown, Johannesburg, in one of the other incumbents' cars cost 242 Rand. Apparently it'll cost 44.25 on Lyfty. Can you believe it? I mean, how on earth are they making money? Is it more people in one car?
I would think so. I know for a fact that from my house to OR is 4.5 kilometers.
Mm.
Last time I checked, Uber, $85 to do the one-way trip.
Well, is it 44 Rand per person in the car, or is it 44 Rand per the trip?
It has to be 44 Rand per person in the car. Surely this is a multi... I mean,
they can't even cover their fuel costs if that's the case.
I couldn't find any reference to multiple people in vehicles, but I'm guessing. And maybe maybe we can get a hold of Lyfty and try and understand what the model looks like. But if it is the case, well, great.
Mm.
I mean, there is definitely a demand. Look at our taxi infrastructure. 16 people in a taxi, or 32. Whichever, you know, number you want to pick, but there is a demand for multiple people in a vehicle, and if somebody can do this via the app, why not? Why not roll this out to the actual taxi industry?
Yeah, well, we know that it works, right? This formula in South Africa is something that yes. you know, Uber's doing so well here. What's it called now? It used to be Taxify, whatever it's called now. Mm. Also doing greatly. And I saw that they're actually rolling out a female version for you know, of Uber called Chauffeur. So yes. there's definitely a place for this. And at this price, it's going to take over.
How do they spell Chauffeur?
Wow.
With a H-E-R
yeah.
at the end.
Yeah.
Well, good. It then tells you exactly what they do. So apparently, if you download this app, its registration is pretty straightforward. And apart from the usual questions, the app seeks personal details such as vehicle registration, vehicle description, and your ID number. And looks like it works just like a ride-hailing app. I'm very curious to follow this story. Wonder if it's going to gain some traction. I hope it actually does. Lifty prices, apparently R7.50 for the base fare, 0 to 20 kilometers R2 per kilometer, 21 to 30 kilometers R1.50 per kilometer, 31 to 45 R1 per kilometer, and then 46 kilometers to 299 kilometers R0.75 per kilometer. You can take a trip from here to Bloemfontein if you like. Over 300 k's is R0.55 per kilometer. I wonder how that works out in terms of versus driving to Bloemfontein.
It might actually be cheaper.
It might be cheaper. Well, let's do the maths while we're talking. How many k's is Bloemfontein?
300 and something.
Yeah, make it 400.
So 400 kilometers times 0.55. R220, surely?
Yeah.
What? Jeez.
No. That doesn't even cover their fuel.
It's got to be multiple people.
It's got to be multiple people.
Everyone pays
the same fare.
Yeah, exactly. Because 220 times, let's call it five people, would be just over R1,000. Mm. To travel 400 kilometers, you're paying...
It's a tank of fuel.
Yeah,
it's
$1,000. Not only that, I think they'll have wear and tear and tires and everything else.
Yeah.
And then they'll have more people needs to get paid.
Yeah,
I think that's going to be the problem, though. It's going to be who wants to drive for a service where you're getting paid less in terms of... You know, your costs.
Fair question.
It's going to be interesting to see this develop. I hope it works, though.
I hope it works out for them. I mean, good. It's South African-led initiative, and it's backed by Kia Motors South Africa. So, I think.
So instead of a Corolla picking up at the airport, it'll be a Kia Cerato.
Well, let's see. Well, it doesn't matter what it is, really. If a cost comes down, I think it's good. It's good for the country's mobility.
Yeah. Right. Definitely.
Now, $70 for the 6 km from my house to the Gautrain station. That's preposterous. But I understand why it has to be like that on Uber.
The shorter the distance, the higher the cost, right?
Yeah. But with this, it will literally be a quarter of that.
Yeah, and then the next story I don't really want to talk about, but I suppose we have to, and that is the e-tolls.
Boo! Boo! What?
Crickets.
Boo!
But anyway, apparently the government is holding fast to their claims that we have to pay e-tolls. So let's see how this one develops. And apparently citing that the roads have become worse and they can't get repaired because e-tolls are not being paid.
Because the roads were poorly made to start off with.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Look, come on.
Martin. Yeah, we have one of the best roads there.
Come on. It's the road conditions will deteriorate, but it has to be repaired. But looks like e-tolls are holding steady on their opinion, rightly or wrongly.
And they're going
so.
To lose.
Well, you know, as the story unfolds, I wonder who the winners and who the losers are. In my opinion, everybody's going to lose.
It's just confusing. Are we paying or not? You know, I don't know what to do anymore. I'm on the fence. I want to be a law-abiding citizen, exactly. But at the same time. If I find out, you know, tomorrow that everybody else, what they owe has been, you know, scrapped, and I pay R10,000, then
you're gonna want your $10,000.
So who's gonna give me my money?
So I suppose everybody's just waiting.
And that is actually the reason why they will not scrap it, because you have, I think it's 15% of people are actually paying.
Yeah.
The other 80 are going, sod it, come get me.
Yeah.
If they say, okay, well, scrap the whole system, they have to give that 15% of people their money back.
Yeah,
that's which good. They don't have because they've sent it overseas.
Let's move on to a better story, which is electric cars. And Rwanda has seized the e-Golf and South Africa doesn't. Now, this one floored me because, come on, South Africa is the first world country of Africa, right?
Yeah,
I think so. Yeah.
I mean, I would say we've got we're a far, we're in my opinion, ahead with a lot of things.
Yeah.
And so why does Rwanda get the e-golf and South Africa doesn't? So the reason seems to be, so I mean, it's been unpacked. The reason seems to be that distances between towns are about 248 kilometers and this golf's range is 230. So that's the reason it's going to Rwanda and not to South Africa. And the point that VW makes is that the N2 stretches for 2,255 kilometers and... one of the reasons we're not getting it. Why?
Well, this kind of answers why we're not getting the ID3 as well then, right? So I think they're kind of trialing it in Rwanda to see if, firstly, Africa could handle in terms of having an infrastructure for this. And then based on that success, we could potentially see
why
it coming
out. Rwanda?
Yes.
Of all places.
Well, apparently the distances.
It's a distance.
Well, there's one sentence here that kind of puts it all in perspective. The Rwandan government has not become addicted to its private car users as potential revenue sources.
Ah, bingo.
Because vehicle ownership is very low in Rwanda compared to South Africa.
Oh. So it's a test. It's a test. It's an experiment.
Yeah.
It's an experiment, and Rwanda is just a suitable, let's call it a suitable test bed. To see how an e-golf or an e-vehicle will work in Africa.
The distance between here and my house is like 25 k's. I drove the BMW i3 a couple of weeks ago. I didn't run out of charge.
Oh, well, it's because the new i3 is actually much better.
Well, I mean, but, look, yeah. 230 kilometers. Yeah. You know, we'll get to the Tesla Bucky just now.
And then there's, of course, you know, controversy. All of our electricity is going there, so...
Wait, to Rwanda?
Yeah. It goes north of the border. Where it goes from there, we're
going to know. So we're supplying electricity for their electric cars that we don't get.
Yeah.
That's just not right, right? Okay, so let's move swiftly along onto our auto talk segment, because if we continue to talk about electric cars that aren't coming to South Africa, I think it's cause for depression. But in the auto talk segment, we have Martin, who's going to review the Toyota GR Supra 3-liter turbo.
Yeah, if in the absence of electric vehicles, let's rather treat ourselves to excellent petrol ones.
I knew there was going to be a stab in there somewhere.
Welcome back, Martin.
Man, what a car. Now, Lawrence, you've driven this as well.
I have.
And?
I want one.
Yes.
I want one so badly, but I don't have $1 million.
That's the problem. I actually stepped into this car expecting serious
emotions. I'm just
going to
stop you there. You didn't step into the car.
No, I fell.
You crawled into it yeah. like you were climbing into a washing machine.
You folded inside.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's actually the reason why I probably wouldn't buy
it. Well, for everybody who doesn't know, Martin's about 7,500 foot tall. That's why you had to crawl into the Supra like a washing machine. You know what? I had this vision because I took my daughter the other day and I put her feet first because she was trying to climb into the bloody washing machine. So I said, okay, you want to feel what this feels like? So I stuck her torso into the washing machine with her shoulders sticking out.
Parenting done right. Yeah.
and she loved it. I didn't stick any more of her body in there just in case she got stuck. But I've got this vision of Martin getting stuck in the Supra.
It's actually very close. For the week after I had the car, I still had the bruises on my back where my spinal column actually got stuck on the roof as I tried to get in and out of this car. Now, I understand I am, well, let's call it...
above average.
Yeah, let's call it slightly tallish.
6'4".
Yeah.
6,400 foot.
But here's the thing. With all these drawbacks, it's not a great touring car because there's almost no interior storage and it's easy.
What's the drawback, Martin? Your height or the size of the car?
Yes.
Both.
Yeah.
It's a combination
of the two. But with all of that, it is just so good to drive. And it's so easy to drive really fast and in a really fun way that I'm actually prepared to overlook its shortcomings. And now we all know that the new Supra largely uses a BMW Z4 skeleton. And it's been redeveloped by Toyota's engineers. And let me tell you one thing, those engineers at Toyota, they really care about their job.
Yeah, because I don't know how... the Toyota guys managed to take a BMW
and skeleton. Then build a better BMW out of it.
And make a better BMW than what BMW could.
Yeah.
So there, for all the BMW searches on autotrader.co.za, if you want to drive a better BMW, buy a Toyota Supra. Is
exactly.
That's
exactly it. That's exactly it.
$4 million.
$4 million. Now, that's a lot of money. The base spec, they call it the track version, is just under $1 million. And the other, this one that I drove is about 1.07.
So anything above the base spec is what, just styling?
No. You get a whole lot of driver assistance and part leather seats and navigation and...
So with all the bells and whistles, what is the price tag coming at?
Let me just double check here. There we go. 1.0723 million.
Oh, so like $100,000.
Yeah. Less than 1.1 million.
Oh, so you're going from 900 and
953
to 1073. So it's 120,000 rand, yeah, odd.
And you're getting a lot
for all of the extras.
For all of those extras.
Let's go that far.
The performance is exactly
yeah,
the
that's
same.
That's what I would have
thought. Engines and gearbox and the running gear and the suspension, everything else is the same. But with all these extra nice to haves, you might as well just speak for the top spec.
I mean, if you're paying 950 grand, you might as well pay 1 million.
Unless you're going to race the car, then yes, buy the track version, because that's what Japan does. We're going to make a car that everybody's going to drive, but then we'll have a lesser one that's just missing a few of the niceties that you can take to the track.
That you can take to the track. Now, you can take this one to the track as well, but it's a bit of a wasted opportunity.
So how fast is this thing? What can I do 100 kilometer sprint in?
4.3 seconds.
That's slow.
That's pretty quick. Is that not quick?
That is pretty.
We've got to start comparing things to electric cars here, people. Come on. Come on. You got to get down to 2.8.
Oh, I was waiting for that.
That's unfair.
Why is it unfair? Just because there's a big chunk of metal in the bonnet.
The sprint to 0 to 100, in my opinion, is
constrained by traction.
It's inconsequential. It's the top speed and the stability at speed.
That's the thing.
Well, I must agree with you. My thinking around sprint speed is 0 to 100, 4.3, but what's 100 to 200?
That's the thing.
Because there the aerodynamics, all of the design of the car starts to play a part.
And here's the thing with the Supra, the traction control light keeps on flickering well past 80 k's an hour if you bury the foot in the metal. So it's constrained by traction.
I'm going to plead the fifth on this one.
Let's just say I didn't achieve the 7.7 litre per 100 average fuel consumption.
Neither did I.
You were trying to drive at electric car speeds, I see.
I was waiting for that.
So how comfortable is this car inside? Besides you having to crawl into it like a washing machine.
Well, that's the thing. Once you're in, and once you've adjusted to the fact you can't see out of it, because it's like sitting inside a motorcycle helmet, really the side windows are very, very shallow. And the front window, the roof rail is, everything is more or less level with my eyesight.
I mean, the
can't you height make the seat higher?
Then
it'll be even worse. So it's a Martin problem. It's not
so
a car problem.
The dashboard is very high.
Yeah.
And the roof line is very low. So you end up with almost like a letterbox, which once you get used to it.
Isn't that kind of like Formula One driving anyway?
Yeah.
It is.
It's a race car.
But once you're used to it and you've adjusted your driving style and you've learned to trust the cameras and all the sensors and things around it, which comes standard with this high spec car and not with the low spec with the track version. Once you've learned to trust some of the electronics and you've adjusted to the fact that you can't see out of it, it's actually very comfortable. And the thing that really shocked me is the ride quality. The ride quality and the seats are actually supremely comfortable. And then you press a few buttons and it turns into a go-kart.
Gee whiz.
That's BMW then.
Everybody said that the Toyota 86 would be the drifter's choice. No, not anymore. This car is made to go sideways, and it makes it so ridiculously easy.
If you want, again, if you want evidence of it, I was going
to
say, if you want evidence of that, on our YouTube channel is
Martin
video,
going sideways.
No, me going sideways.
Ah,
doing a Gymkhana, and you just see how effortless the car is to put into a sideways drift
and then control
and just
it.
Sit there with one hand on the steering wheel because it's that easy.
Well, I mean, for everybody's benefit, drifting is not saying it's not hard, Lawrence, but drifting, once you start to get the hang of it is actually not a difficult thing to do. Putting a car sideways in a controlled fashion,
but keeping it there
is, you know, it's okay.
The control over the car.
It's people seem to lose their mind when the car starts to go sideways, and you just got to kind of change the way you feel the car and its gyroscopes.
Well, that's the thing with this car. It makes it so easy to go sideways. And then keep it sideways. And the little twitch of the steering wheel puts it straight again.
So I believe 200 cars were brought into the country and all sold.
Yeah.
Yeah, the first shipment was 200 cars. All gone.
So why can't they do the same with the ID3? Just 50, please. Just 50.
Why can all the OEMs in South Africa not have a look at their electric offerings in Europe and say, let's bring in 20?
Mm-hmm. Yes, 200 sold. I'm sure that that we're going to get 50 sold on the basis of going 0 to 100 in 3 seconds.
And the fact that it costs 118 Rand to fill your tank.
Yeah.
Is it a Supra, Martin? Is my big question.
It is absolutely a Supra. The older ones were not very pretty either, same as this. Although I must say that all the onlookers loved the way this car looked.
Yeah.
So my opinion on the looks is obviously entirely subjective.
So it seems to be a very popular car because there's 25,000 searches on Auto Trader in October 2019 alone, which is a good set of search volume, and all 200 cars are sold out.
Yeah, and all those people who say, "Yo, but it's not a real Supra, it's a BMW underneath."
Jeez, you do that well, eh?
Just go. That's my troll voice. I practice it all weekend.
Your troll voice.
It's my troll voice. So if anyone ever says that, just tell them, go drive it and then come again. Because it has the right character and it has the right driving characteristics.
I can add, drive a Z4, drive this, back to back, and then tell me that's the same car.
Yeah.
And then I'll slap you because you don't know what you're
talking about. You obviously have no idea what you're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's such a fantastic car, even with all its faults, and there are many. I still gave it a 4.5 out of 5 because it is just such an incredible driver's car. If you love driving, you will adore the Supra, and that's guaranteed.
I love the front styling. It's almost like McLaren-ish.
Yeah, with that splitter look thing in the front bumper.
It looks really McLaren-ish.
It's probably one of the only layovers from the FT1 concept.
The general shape also basically carried through. The thing that really struck me as very cute on that car, when you turn off the stability control.
Cute. Go sideways.
Yeah, you know, to go sideways, like I did on track.
Just making that clear.
Just making that clear. There's an animation on the center display of a Supra going around a corner. And when you turn it off, you see these cute little smoke trail animations from the Supra's tires as the thing starts drifting in the animation.
That's brilliant.
I'm supposed to watch the road, Martin.
No, but that's when you turn it off, when you're still standing still, when you engage maximum attack mode on track.
Maximum attack mode. Is that a car term?
No, yes. It's not. Well, it's a car guy term.
It's what
term.
We call it.
Yeah.
A maximum attack. Well, there are 31 2019 Supras available on Auto Trader right now. So those 200 that are sold out, go get yourself a low mileage 2019 model. There's 31, and there's some really nice looking ones here.
Yeah.
Really nice. I don't think I've scrolling through all these cars, I haven't seen an ugly one.
Yeah, go for a red one or a blue one or a yellow one.
The silver and the white are a little bit bland.
Yeah.
But other than that, I would like to add though, I was watching a bit of coverage of the SEMA show that this past week. There were 46 of these cars at SEMA in various states of tune and design change and everything, which tells you just how popular this is, a worthy successor to the Mark nameplate. So Mark IV, put it away.
Yep.
It's done. It's dusted. It's not the Halo anymore.
Yeah.
And that's this the thing. I'm old enough to remember what the Supra used to be in the 80s and 90s. Because I've driven the second generation, third and fourth.
You and me both.
So I've driven them all, and this car encapsulates everything that used to make a Supra great, just wrapped in modern sheet metal with an absolutely killer drivetrain.
So go buy one.
I'm excited.
So go buy one. If you can find one, buy one.
The team love this car. Seems to be sideways, not fast enough, Toyota Supra.
It's more than fast enough.
I'm only talking in terms of electric cars, which is our next story. So Tesla brings the debut of the long-awaited Tesla Bucky on November the 21st, which
the
is
Truckler.
The Truckler. Well, I don't know if it's going to be called the Truckler, but but they don't want to tease a picture of this car. Nobody has seen what the bloody thing looks like. And it is sported to have a range of about 640 kilometers between charges.
Jeez.
All other electric car, 230 kilometer, 150 kilometer, 640 kilometer range on the Tesla. And we'll get to another story just now, and maybe that's why that that particular phenomenon is happening when we get to our crazy talk segment. But Elon Musk tweeted that the Cybertruck doesn't look anything like I've seen bouncing around on the internet. So don't look at the cars on the internet. They don't look like the Truckler. It's closer to an armored personnel carrier from the future. So I wonder what this thing's going to look like.
Well, there was a woman, a lady engineer from the States, who bought a Model 3, yes, cut it up, and turned it into
the Truckler.
Mm. Yeah. And so this is not the Truckler, people.
Here's hoping, because, God, I don't know what...
No, that thing is dog ugly. That thing was dog ugly. It was
you know what, though, George? I think commercial vehicles and SUVs are prime candidates for electrification, because you have a lot more space to work with. So you can basically fit where in a normal Bucky you'd have a prop shaft and a gearbox.
Put battery packs and skateboard design.
Exactly.
For double the price.
It's though. Perfect for that kind of application. And yeah, that's, I think, where the
640. How long has Rimac been working on their electric Bucky?
It's been a while.
Yeah. The vaporware.
Yeah. We'll see.
Well, if anything should come to South Africa,
it has to be one.
It has to be a Bucky,
because it's us. It's our national vehicle.
It is our natural habitat, Buckies. So please, Elon, bring that bloody Bucky here.
That bloody Bucky.
So I'm looking forward to seeing the Bucky on the 21st of November, and you know, long may Buckies rule in South Africa, I'd say. And so that, I guess, gets us into our next segment, which is our industry talk. And today we're talking about the South African motor dealers' road to recovery needs clearer lanes. South African motor dealers
Who comes
are under
up with
pressure.
These headlines, really.
Journalists. Puns
work. I was about to claim that until you said. No, so South African car dealers are, particularly new car dealers, are under pressure. In September, we saw 37,707 new passenger and commercial vehicles sold through the dealer network, compared to 38,326 sold in the corresponding month last year, which represents a 1.6% decline year on year. Now, you know, you might think that 1.6% is insignificant, but it is very representative of where new car sales is headed, because now this has been a consistent theme. Decline after decline after decline. And if you just take the year to date, January to now, a total of 326,295 new vehicles have been sold through dealer floors to September, and showing a 3.7% decline for the first 9 months of 2019, and represents 12,555 vehicles less that were sold in 2019, and just over an average of 1,400 per month. So an average of 1,400 per month in terms of a decline, and we saw 37 from 38 in the last month. So where is this all headed?
Used cars.
I think so. Mm. Well, I mean,
people holding onto their cars longer.
We all need to remember, sorry, George, that 2018, where they're to which they're comparing 2019 sales, were already down on the year before that.
Well, I think it's a sign of yes, economic times, but it's a sign of future consumer behavior in terms of seeing a car potentially as an appliance.
Mm.
You know, something that gets you from A to B, and in a very far-flung future where, you know, you don't really want to own a car, right?
I think Lawrence was saying it now as well. It's the fact, also something that adds to this is the fact that people are just keeping their cars for longer. The week before, we're talking about how the OEMs are extending warranties, and it's essentially
to try and stimulate demand.
Yeah, and we can see what's happening in the market because of it.
Exactly. So let's wait and see. But you know, 7% of our GDP is from the automotive industry, and it's a big chunk. So you know, this the declines, while concerning, is it not just an indicator of change in behavior? And like you say, used cars, I mean, used cars are selling. Change in behavior of the future of non-car ownership.
Yeah.
You know, the kids of today, do they really care?
Maybe you'd know, George. Used car and secondhand car sales, are they up versus, or is there a decline in them as well?
Well, I think it's largely a flat environment. You know, it's remember, new cars always become the secondhand cars of the future. So a long-term decline in new car sales is going to create a
fewer secondhand cars,
which then plays into the economics of demand and supply for secondhand cars. Because if you can't get your hands on good secondhand cars, now you've got a you know, an issue from a demand and supply point of view. However, secondhand cars can change hands more frequently, which then pushes up the sales rate. But from a couple of weeks ago, as one dealer referred to, we unpacked the fact that South Africans are holding onto their cars longer. So now you've got this decline in new car sales. You've got consumers holding onto their cars longer, which then plays into secondhand car prices being buoyant. So secondhand car prices, you know, because there would be higher demand when someone wants a car, because there's no stock in the market. Or it could decline if you know, if there's too much supply of a particular variant. So it remains to be seen, but you know, with the recent 0.8% decline in household expenditure, the RAND and the GDP being its lowest since the 2008 global financial crisis, and I don't like doom and gloom, but these are facts. The National Automobile Dealers Association maintains that there is a critical developments in the, on the immediate horizon, which could be the building blocks to build business and consumer confidence. So that's the positive outlook, is that nobody's stopping and just saying, woe is us, we're just going to fall into a hole. Because that, I think,
it's business as usual.
Exactly. So bring on the electric cars, is what I say. Martin sighs every time I say that. but further from home, a car industry in for a rough ride, says VW. So VW says its profits have jumped 44%, which is one of the only OEMs who has a increasing profit margin, or not profit margin, increasing profit trajectory. And their profits have increased by 44% in the third quarter, thanks to a more profitable mix of vehicles. Must be the IDE and the e-Golf.
No, it's all their
it's
SUVs.
T-Cross.
All
the
Yeah, they're probably just playing to the market. I mean, we see on autotrader.co.za the most searched for vehicles are BMW, but most sold is VW. So
every single month.
Was that your Siri?
Yeah, it was.
Does she have something to say about the vehicle sales?
She's shocked as well. She's shocked. As much as we are. But sure, you just said it. I think that's the thing, right? It's like every single month on month and month on month, VWs
kicking ass.
In new and used. Well, I don't know what it is.
I'm currently in the T-Cross now.
Yeah, I saw that outside. Yeah. So before you get there, Lawrence, the fact of the matter is VW is doing something right. Mm. Because, you know, all the woes aside and all the controversy aside, they are playing to what the consumer wants.
And the sales figures show that, because three most popular cars in their fleet, Polo, Vivo, Polo, and now the T-Cross. The car's been out for, call it 6 weeks. They've already sold in the first month, I think it was over 1,000 units. In the second month, over another 1,000 units. So,
third most sold car last month.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's unbelievable.
So they've sold 10.8 million vehicles in the last year, which is, you know, we can't even figure that out. We get a very small percentage of that 10.8 million. So VW's after-tax profit rose by 3.98 billion euros to 66 billion in quarter three, as revenues rose 11% to 61 billion euros. A sales margin of 7.8% exceeded their goals, which they set at 6.5 to 7.5%, as vehicles bringing higher profits took a larger share of sales, which means that the cars that are actually selling, which are the most popular, actually have the highest margins.
SUVs. Costs as much to build as a car, but you can sell it at a 15% premium because it sits taller.
So why is the industry in for a rough ride then?
Well,
if we see these numbers going up.
Because the rest of the industry is suffering. China is slowing down.
Laughing. Ha, 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 ha.
Yeah, China is slowing down. The US is slowing down. Everyone else is slowing down. And it's basically Volkswagen's riding the wave of
consumer demand. Change.
Consumer demand.
Well, you know, the thinking is that global car makers are facing the slowdown in sales because of the disputes over the trade and pressure from the European Union and China to develop and sell low-emission vehicles that require heavy investment in new technology. Now, VW is starting to lead this charge with this new ID3. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not stuffing around. The new ID3, and we know that the VW Polo and the Golf GTI are the two most popular cars. VW Polo being the most popular in South Africa. So this ID3 seems to mimic that, just on an electric car. Mm. So
bring the freaking thing to South Africa.
Took the words right out of my mouth.
Are you listening, VW South Africa? Bring an ID3. Bring 50. I guarantee you they will be sold in the first month that they're here.
Or Lawrence will buy them.
I'd buy one.
If you could afford it.
Wonder what it'll go for. Let's check.
Well, look, it won't be cheap.
Yeah, no, it won't
because
be cheap.
Of R&D costs, yeah, and import costs, and taxes, and
they said it's going to be golf prices, eh? So.
Well, now we're back to the freaking tax problem. Anyway.
I don't know.
My word.
Anyway, yeah. Running around the mulberry bush.
So that's it on the front of our industry talk segment, and you know, let's get into some fun and talk some crazy stuff. And in our first crazy talk piece, child seats now have alarms.
Is this for the American market?
Well, it seems to be Rome and Italy.
Mildred, I gone done forgot the kids in the car again.
Well, that's what I don't understand, you see, because the way these alarms in these car seats work is for you not to forget your child in the car. I don't understand this. Like, if the child's not strapped in properly, I'd expect to be having an alarm. Yeah. If the child's not in the seat, I'd expect there to be an alarm, or the car recognizes that there's an actual child in the car with a car seat that's not buckled in. But how do you even forget your child in the car?
Hashtag parenting done right.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have a kid, but I think that's the first or the most important thing that would be in my car, you know, that I'd have
what,
to remember.
The alarm?
Oh. The child.
Yes. When you get out, how do you even walk away from your car and say... I've just brought a child into this world and I forgot him in the car.
Has any of you ever been forgotten at school, in primary school?
Let's not talk about that.
So that's where I actually expect the alarm to go. It's like, listen, you have a kid and you forgot to put the kid in here.
Well.
Go get your child.
Go get your child. Well, in Italy, this law was passed in Parliament and entered into force after the necessary implementation regulation was published in October. The Transport Ministry said in a statement and amended this code, making it mandatory for parents to use a special car seats for their children up to the age of 4. Well, car seats, I think, is mandatory. You should not. I mean, I've driven down, you know, the roads, and because I drive an SUV, you're quite high up, and you see toddlers bouncing around the car, which I'm like, do you understand what's going to happen when you, if you have an accident and that child's not not buckled in? But I just don't get the concept here. I just don't.
I'm speechless because once again, this is another one of those cases where there's a signboard on the wall. And that signboard exists because somebody did something stupid like hanging their child over the fence to get a better look at the crocodile.
It's one of those.
So things. Now they had to put up a signboard that says, please do not dangle your child over the fence above the hungry crocodiles. This is saying somebody, some idiot left their kid in a car and now everybody has to suffer the consequences of stupidity.
Abandonment. So now they're boosting the economy for these child car seats. But it's called the anti-abandonment seat.
It's a fitting name.
There's a fund being set up with these anti-abandonment seats that contributes 30 euros or 500 rand for each device purchased by families. Now, maybe the law will drive car seats better and drive people to actually putting children in car seats, which I'm all for.
What, in their Fiat 500s?
Well, in their Fiat, doesn't matter what Fiat is in, as long as the car's in a bloody child seat, right? But I don't know. Maybe we should just move on.
8 such cases registered in the last 12 years.
And that's a reason to pass a law.
That's a reason to pass a law.
They should, right, shouldn't they really take on those people that...
Zero health and safety. Yay!
Oh, goodness gracious me.
I thought so. That is what you call first world problems. When you have nothing else to worry about and you start nitpicking. Sorry, I'm not saying eight.
And yet they drive around on Vespas with no helmets, smoking cigarettes and drinking espressos. Ciao.
But their accident death rate is lower than ours.
Yep, in spite of their driving.
Yeah. Exactly. I'll tell you something. Maybe these laws have some sort of effect that we haven't figured out yet. But anyway, let's move swiftly along. A big bus is swallowed by a big sinkhole in Pittsburgh. Now, what I can't understand about this image is that hole is perfectly square. Did anybody notice that?
Yeah.
Well, it's usually sinkholes are not natural. They happen
around. So they shouldn't be square, right?
So that is...
conspiracy.
No. It's usually there will be a concrete,
like a slab
or something, and water erodes underneath it, and it sinks and everything on top of it. Yeah.
So you think this is real?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
It happens all the time. We get them in Joburg all the time.
Chevrolet lost 50 historic Corvettes in that way.
The entire Corvette museum disappeared
in Bowling Green in Kentucky. Yeah,
but the sinkhole wasn't square, right? That's what I don't understand about this sinkhole.
This one perfectly square. This it's obviously an urban road, and it looks like there must have been a patch or an access port or something in that
position. The size of a bus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
We've had roads, Martin will confirm, roads in Pretoria. Entire sections of road disappear into the ground.
Yeah.
So be careful, people.
Watch out for sinkholes.
Watch out for the sinkhole. Don't
stop. Because if it swallows a city bus, it will eat up your Kia Picanto and not even spit out the oily bits.
Get an electric car. So commuters in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania had a rough morning on the 28th of October when the rear of a bus collapsed into a sinkhole. The front of a Kia also fell into the hole. That's no joke. And it wasn't because of what Martin said.
I didn't even see that.
There was no serious injuries, but cranes were necessary to pull out the bus. The incident also snarled traffic in the area throughout the day.
I wonder why.
It's usually water erosion. Mm. I mean, here in Johannesburg, it is the underlying ground that we're on.
I take it back. It's not square. The underlying ground that we're on?
Yeah, the underlying ground we're on gets eaten away by acid mine drainage from the mining industry from many, many decades ago, and it eats through the softer rock, and entire houses disappear. It's happened before. It continues to happen.
Centurion is famous for that.
At least I sleep on the second floor.
So you'll be able to get out of bed and walk to your car.
Yeah. So the back of this hole doesn't seem to be squared. Looks like Martin was pointing out, there must have been some sort of pre-molded square piece of concrete or tar underneath. The back does look like it just broke off.
That's terrifying.
It is terrifying. But it doesn't look too deep.
I've always wondered what would happen if I were to drive along and suddenly the road would open up in front of me. It's actually been a real fear of mine.
What, if the road just disappeared?
Yeah.
How common does that happen in South Africa, though? Not so much.
You go to Cape Town, you see the bridges just end.
Well, true. Yeah. And it's so easy to take the wrong turn off in Cape Town and end up at the point where the freeway is not complete and hasn't been for the last 35 years.
Exactly. So moving on to the next story, why is there so much Tesla hate? Like, what is it about people? So,
jealousy.
What people don't understand is that Teslas are equipped with 360-degree cameras that can be switched on to record all the time. Mm. And this one lady was caught, if you go and look at the image that we're going to put up on social media, one lady was caught keying a Tesla by the Tesla's cameras, and then subsequently handed herself in, and don't know what happened to her after that. But what most Tesla owners know is that all Teslas are built over the past several years are capable of recording video from at least four cameras at all times. Basically, there's 360-degree cameras in operation all the time. And over the past couple of months, there's been a woman in Colorado who keyed a Model 3 as she walked past it. And like I said, there was no prior incident that was necessitated her keying this poor person's car. After this video was publicized, she turned herself in and was charged with a felony. And there have been dozens of documented keyings, hit and runs, and leggings. What are leggings?
I have no idea.
What is a legging? Legging?
Kick the door and run.
Oh, a motorcyclist. Or a motorcyclist. Yeah. Just kick it and leg it.
I've seen some motorcyclists do that, you know, when they get upset. And the classic one is vandalizing public Tesla supercharging stations. Like, what is wrong with these people?
I think these are the same people who roll coal with their brodozers.
What? Say that in English.
These are the people who roll coal. You know, oh, no, 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 no. Sorry, you only focus on electrics. What people do in America...
rolling coal. You take all the baffles out of the exhaust and you churn up the fuel and then you put your foot on the accelerator and a giant plume of black smoke comes out of the stacks.
And these people actually enjoy rolling coal over convertibles and Teslas and Priuses.
Wow.
And they're also the ones who buy a green Ram Bucky and then a pickup truck, and then park it in a recharging station just because it's green and it says green cars only.
So I'm curious, why do people hate Teslas this much?
Jealousy.
Yeah, it's pure jealousy.
I mean, the car's been voted, you know, best car in the world already, the Tesla Model S. It has got the longest range of any electric vehicle. It is priced competitively. It's not as expensive as other electric vehicles.
Yeah.
And it sold the most cars, electric cars in the world. Tesla sold the most electric cars in the world and has the most mileage of any road system.
But they're also sold to people with a higher intellect. And in America at the moment, intellectual superiority is frowned upon.
No.
Yes.
Why?
Well, look at their president.
They don't like people who are smarter than them.
They don't like intellectuals. That's the long and the short of it. And unfortunately, while there are...
Are you calling him intellectual?
No, I'm calling the exact opposite of intellectual.
Oh. So why do they hate him?
No, they don't. That's the problem.
They love him.
Okay, I'm confused. I don't know how we got from electric cars to the presidency of the United States. But anyway, why do people hate Teslas this much? Is it because Elon Musk is South African? I don't think so. Is it because of jealousy? I think so. I think everything's going well for Tesla and people just don't like it.
And they don't like the idea that they can't get away with clean coal.
It's like when they see a supercar. Supercars also go through the same thing in America. It's just jealousy.
Yeah. Sad but true, I suppose. One of those... unfortunate situations. And in our final segment that we call Grid Talk, the championship has been won.
Go on,
Mandile Sishi. Let's hear about that final race in Austin, Texas.
Austin, Texas was the field for the crowning of a champion, potentially. That's if Hamilton could finish better than eighth. And Bottas in first, but it was a good race. I think all in all was fantastic. Qualifying start with Hamilton actually beginning in fifth, behind Ferrari's Charles, then Max, then Seb, and then Valtteri. And Seb would go on to the race and unfortunately not finish. There was something wrong with his suspension, but the battle between Hamilton and Vettel was, you know, one of the best I've seen. Once again, we could see that the Finn, given the right car and given the right conditions, will show Hamilton that he's not the only person who's a contender. We wrapped it up the season this past week, and now there's a fight for third, which is going to be interesting, I think, between Seb, Max, and Charles. I don't know what you think about that.
Fight for third or second?
For third. Second's definitely.
Bottas got it in the bag. Mm. Yeah. He's definitely got it in the bag.
Definitely
got it in the bag. Okay, yeah. So it's a fight for third to the end. How many races we got left?
Two left. We're going to Brazil this coming week, which I'm really excited for. And then after that, it's Dubai. Yeah. Hmm.
Season wrap.
Just like that.
As far as I'm concerned, it's already over.
Hmm. I don't know. I disagree. I want to see that battle. That battle for third is important because it's money. And coming into the new regulations, the teams need the money. So I think Max is going to be fighting.
So
super
now, does Mercedes take their foot off the gas and just?
No, I think the rest of the season for Mercedes is development. That's what they'll do.
100%.
It'll be development. It'll be racing to the hilt in order to understand how to beat the rest next year. Because let's be honest, they won the Constructors' Championship. I'm sure you agree with me. One day, and Hamilton won the Drivers' Championship with a second-rate car.
Mm. Pretty much.
Yeah.
They won it. In my opinion, Ferrari lost it.
I must say that there was a bit of a rumor mill going around, something that Max said at Austin about Ferrari cheating.
Yeah.
Apparently, they said something about a fuel cheating system that Ferrari may have been using, which gave them an advantage, and then there was a technical clarification sent out, and all of a sudden Ferrari's pace disappeared.
Mm.
So there's...
Their pace didn't really disappear in Austin, did it?
Yeah. They went from
Uncatchable.
So it's unconfirmed. It's rumors. Mm. Everybody get your tinfoil hats on, but...
Yeah, I don't know. I think it was just like Renault. They found a way around the rules.
Yeah.
I wouldn't go as far as calling it cheating. I think it's understanding the formula better.
Bent the rules a little.
Yeah.
You didn't say we couldn't do it.
We just did it. Well, anyway, so that's a wrap. Thank you. Thank you, Juan Dile, for the Formula One season. Very finally, we have a legacy in South Africa.
We do.
A legacy. Let me just let the crickets play out there for a second. There is a legacy of South Africans making it big overseas. Elon Musk is an example, and there's a couple of others. And then the latest, which is Brad Binder, who's gone from riding Formula 3 and winning to then taking a third place in Formula 2, and now he's got a spot in MotoGP. I think I'm talking Formula 1 terms, but MotoGP 3, MotoGP 2, and now I've got a spot in MotoGP, I believe.
Yeah.
So Brad Binder, South African. And then in the Formula 1 world, the South Africans, Dirk de Beer, appointed head of aerodynamics at Renault F1.
Yeah, super exciting. He's actually been on the grid for a few years now, but he was kicked out of a few teams and called back, and there was lots of internal issues. But, you know, Renault
couldn't
is,
understand Afrikaans.
But Renault has called him up again to head the aerodynamics team.
Lovely.
Which is super exciting. I think it's the most important job outside of, obviously, the engineers and the drivers.
Well, kudos, I mean, in the days when Schumacher was winning in the Ferrari, there was a South African designer that was in charge of, I think it was aerodynamics in Ferrari. Rory Byrne, yes,
Rory Byrne. Yeah.
Was Rory Byrne? Was he in charge of aerodynamics? Let's check. Rory Byrne.
Ask the Google machine.
Yes, head of what? Ah, well, don't know.
I think what's more interesting, though, about who's this Dirk, is the fact that they fired the old aerodynamicists for him. So what was going on at Renault? Do you think it was because they were supposed to be on Red Bull level, right? And all of a sudden, it's, you know, leave bringing this the South African. Let's see what they can do next season.
Well, let's see. I hope this. What's his name? Dirk de Beer makes some waves because you know, he's South Africa. Exactly, he's a good name. Rory Byrne was head of design at Ferrari, and it was in the time that Schumacher was winning. So yeah. maybe there's hope.
Yeah,
for
SAGP.
No,
For
Mr.
what,
Mr. Schumann?
Yeah, let's hope.
Let's hope there's some lights at the end of the tunnel for Renault because of Dirk de Beer and well, people, that's it. What are you up to for the rest of the day?
I have to go and film a T-cross.
A T-cross. Interesting stuff.
And I'm doing some interesting stuff with Mercedes, hopefully. So excited for that.
Interesting stuff with Mercedes. Oh, that sounds on.
Oh, that's right. I'm joining you for that.
Yeah.
I forgot all about that. Sorry.
So besides the T-Cross Mercedes-Benz, Martin?
I'll be at home writing.
Ah, we'll be at home writing about the next electric car.
No.
Peugeot 108.
Highly unlikely.
Okay, people, that's a wrap. See you in 2 weeks' time. CliffCentral.com.